wonderful, majestic world around us, it's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
So, this week on Dear Science, we're joined by Alan Blackman. Kia ora, Alan. Thanks for being here.
Yeah. Always a pleasure, you know.
Let's kick off with this first story about a study that found dogs can tell when people are lying to them.
I know. You sort of wonder how they come up with these sorts of studies, really. Who gets funded to do this sort of stuff? But, you know, it's important to know if dogs are lying to you, or if they know that you're lying to them. So these are workers at the University of Vienna in Austria, and they did a study of 260 dog volunteers. Now, I don't know how the dogs were volunteered, obviously by their owners, but...
I volunteer as tribute.
So the way that they did this was that they trained all of these dogs, and this must have taken, you know, a decent whack of time anyway. So they trained all of the dogs to follow the advice of somebody who was telling them that there was a treat in a particular dog bowl. So they had two dog bowls, and in one of them was a hidden treat. And so they trained up all of the dogs with this one particular person who was unknown to the dog. And they would say, right, the treat's in that bowl. And the dog would, you know, go to that bowl, find the treat, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what then happened was the dog learned to follow the directions of that particular person and learned to trust them, essentially. And then once all that was done, and as I say, goodness knows how long that took, then they switched things around a little bit. So what they then did was that they brought in some other people, and they then let the dogs look at the treats being placed in the particular bowls. So the dogs knew who was placing the treats in the bowls, and they also knew where the treats were. And then they would repeat the experiment, the original experiment that they did with somebody telling the dog that the treat is here or there. Now, they did this in two ways. So the first way was that they brought somebody new in who was not there when the treats were placed in the bowls. And so obviously this person didn't know which bowl the treat was in, so they were just sort of pointing randomly. And amazingly, the dogs figured that out. The dogs figured out that the person wasn't there when the treats were put in the bowl, so they would not know where the treats were. So the dogs started ignoring their advice. They'd been trained to take their advice, but they knew that this person didn't know. And furthermore, they then brought back the original person, who was then going to tell them untruths, obviously. And again, the dogs knew. The dogs knew where the treats were. They'd been trained to trust the human. The human was giving them wrong information, and so the human was lying to them. The dogs knew.
Wow. Goodness. Do you have a dog, Alan?
No, I don't. I've got three cats, or we've got three cats, actually. Oh, right. So, yes.
Do you lie to your cats?
Occasionally, you know, when you're trying to get them out of the house or something like that. Come on, treats.
Yeah. I also like my cat, Alan, don't worry.
Let's move on to this meta-analysis that suggests vegetarian diets are linked to high depression scores.
Yeah, interesting this, very interesting. And again, kind of an interesting topic to study. You know, who sort of thought this up? Just something random. People think, you know, what are the causes of depression? Might be diet, which is, you know, a fair enough supposition, I guess. And so, in fact, there are quite a few studies in the literature of this particular topic of whether there is any link between diet, in this case, vegetarian diet, and depression. And indeed, if you go to the literature, as these people did, you will find varying answers to that question. So some findings were that, yes, there is seemingly some link. Other findings saying, no, there's a distinctly opposite link, that people on vegetarian diets are happier, et cetera, et cetera. So they decided to do this thing called a meta-analysis, where you basically go through the literature and you weed out the rubbish, really. And, you know, this is sad that there is rubbish in the literature, but there is. And so these workers who are in Germany, they decided to use some very, very strict criteria to basically say, right, this is a good study, this isn't a good study, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there were, I think, 37 odd studies in the literature. And of those, they went through and applying those strict criteria, they found 13 that they were then going to study. And in these 13 studies, there were around about 50,000 participants, around about 42,000 of whom were meat eaters, and around about 8,000 of whom were vegetarians. And then, having picked out these studies, they would then go and do some heavy statistical analysis of all of this sort of stuff. And basically, the finding was, yes, that there is a definite correlation here, that vegetarian diets do seem to be linked with higher rates of depression. Wow. And that's very interesting, a very, very interesting finding.
And they have sort of, do they have any idea why that is?
Well, this is the whole thing about causation. This is this whole question. So, yes, there does appear to be a link, but they warned against sort of taking any inferences from this, because there's two ways that you can look at this. You could say, right, the vegetarian diet causes depression, or, and this might sound weird, depression causes the vegetarian diet. So in other words, people who are depressed, very possibly being in that particular unfortunate situation, then start thinking about taking better care of themselves, eating better, exercising, all of that sort of stuff, and then, as a result of that, switching to a vegetarian diet.
Okay.
So you can't say which is causing which.
Right.
And
so they're linked.
Yeah. So there's a definite link. And what they also, well, so, I mean, the problem with anything to do with diet, there's just so many variables that you can either take account of, or probably you can't really. And one of these variables was gender. They were thinking that there's a lot more female vegetarians than males, so maybe that had some effect here that was skewing the results, but they allowed for that in their statistical analysis, and that was found to not be the case. So that's basically the guts of it, that yes, there's certainly some sort of link. However, the 50,000 people that they were surveying were very much from sort of a minority of countries, only from a couple of countries. And so what they really are thinking, that if they're going to look at this in more detail in the future, they're going to have to go to a lot wider number of countries, you know, larger number of countries, and see if this then replicates across, I guess, different cultures, et cetera, et cetera. So very interesting. So all you vegetarians out there, you know, don't be too worried about this necessarily, because you know, the fact that you're vegetarian isn't going to necessarily lead to depression. But, you know, the actual link that is there does seem to certainly be there. It's just a matter of, you know, what that link is and why it's there.
Yeah, so, yeah. It's fascinating.
Yeah, kind of interesting.
I just want to thank the person quickly that texted in just before, saying that lying to your dog is a bit rough, R-U-F-F. Just thought I'd share that with you guys.
Just to go back to that, actually, that they have repeated that experiment with young children and chimpanzees and macaques. And in all of those cases, they found that the kids and the chimps and everything, they actually ended up trusting the people. So even when the people were lying to them, they would trust them more often than not. So dogs basically are untrustworthy. There you go.
Dog detectives. And finally, Ellen, this is quite exciting. Let's talk about the world's first synthesis of plastics from carbon dioxide.
Yeah, carbon dioxide, eh? You know, everybody knows that it is bad for the environment, and sadly, carbon dioxide is the fate of every carbon atom on planet Earth. Every carbon atom left to itself is eventually going to turn into carbon dioxide. And when that happens, we're all going to be well and truly out of here. So we don't want that happening. So we're going to have to find uses for CO2, which is not necessarily the easiest thing in the world, because, as I said, sort of CO2 is the end result of all combustion reactions. So getting it to go the other way is a difficult thing. However, what you can do is to utilize CO2 in various chemical processes. And one of these is to make polymers, things called polycarbonates. So you may have heard of these sorts of very, very tough plastic things, polycarbonates. And you can make them from CO2. And so a bunch of researchers in Japan have just very recently published what they call a green synthesis of these polycarbonates. And green chemistry is a big thing at the moment, obviously trying to minimize waste and maximize efficiency so that, you know, you don't get all of these nasty byproducts and stuff like that. And so these guys have done this. They've done this particular process at atmospheric pressure as well. So we're not using enormous amounts of energy, having to pressurize up the CO2 in order to get this to react. They've just managed to do it with a special catalyst, a thing called cerium dioxide. And that is one of these rare earth elements, cerium, that you may have heard of. And it seems to be a very, very facile process and quite an exciting process. Obviously, the more CO2 you can tie up in things like this, the better. And, you know, ironically, you're actually making plastics. You know, plastics are the next bad thing as well, aren't they? But ironically, you can use CO2 to make these plastics. And so these polycarbonates, they can then be used further in things like polyurethanes and stuff like that. All of these different types of polymers that you can then make from these polycarbonates. So this is kind of exciting that potentially, you know, we have a use for significant amounts now of CO2. And as soon as you make that commercially viable, then people are going to do it. So, you know, more power to them, I guess. So all good.
Yeah, cool. That's quite exciting technology, isn't it? Awesome. Hey, thanks so much for joining us today, Alan.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
And we will see you in a few weeks.
Absolutely. Shall do.
Namahi. All right.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.